Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And, you know, I look at the grand conspiracy. I think at a certain point, because you've heard me say this, that I don't believe back in the 1700s there was a real large cabal. I think that there were many cabals. There were, you know, the large cabals were things like the, you know, the churches, the Catholic Church and so forth. Obviously, the Catholic Church was called out for being a cabal in the 1500s. And as a matter of fact, if you understand Dante's Demarchia, which I think he wrote in, you know, during, obviously it was during his lifespan, and I think that was the 10th or the 11th century, he wrote a book that had him exiled from the church because his book called for this unification of religion and government. And you got to remember that this is post the Roman Empire. But he's basically saying we've got to get back to that in this book. And he was exiled for that because I believe that it was a book that would lead people to understand what was coming. At least maybe that is the underlying message. I think there was an official message that, you know, we don't want to go back there type of thing that was utilized. But my point is that I don't believe that, not that Satan, Lucifer wasn't working and constantly working on, you know, different people doing different things so that down the road they would lead themselves together and then be able to join forces. And so just like the Christians during persecution, there's no doubt in my mind, Lucifer or Satan probably had a code, a hand, you know, a symbol or handshake or something that would actually typify or, you know, help that person that they believe might be one of them, so that if they responded in kind, then they go, oh, because if you look at Christianity, if you understand the symbol of the fish, the symbol of the fish was used during the persecution of Christianity because a person, not knowing whether you're a Christian or not, they would kind of write the wave in the sand and the ground or what have you. And if the other person completed the other half of the wave in creating the fish, then they knew. And so it was kind of like, it was all about being safe because you had no idea with the potential and the hazards you were dealing with. I mean, you would be killed, just like the witches in Salem and so forth. I mean, what they were doing. And, you know, it's interesting how today we glorify or actually we vilify those people who reacted that way. And, you know, it is what it is, but the way the left gets on their high horse and acts like, oh, they're, you know, how terrible, you know, persecuting these people. You know, what the heck are they doing today with the rainbow, with the in your face? I mean, the intolerance is just, I mean, it's hypocritical. As a matter of fact, they're proving how intolerant they really are. And as a matter of fact, the more emboldened and the more empowered they become, the more that intolerance will turn towards scorched earth. In other words, they're heading down this point to where if you're not on the program with them, then they don't need you and they might as well just take you into the chamber and get rid of you. It's that bad. Now, When we kind of look at, you know, how things are going to transpire, you know, read the scriptures. The scriptures will help prepare you. But how we got to this place is always fascinating, and it's always, and so it is consuming. And the reason I'm going to talk about this is just due to the fact that it can take and consume your life. And so yesterday, and I say this because I get pulled into this all the time. I get people all the time talking about, and I've realized that when somebody starts talking ill about the 14th Amendment, they're either, you know, so far gone, or they are so illiterate regarding the 14th Amendment that they just believed everything that they were told. They never read it. They never went through the debates in Congress regarding it. They never understood how it had been perverted by the courts as soon as the ink dried on it. Why did the courts do that? Because it was that problematic for the progressive agenda. And when I say the progressive agenda, what I'll actually say is it was that problematic for the takeover or the corruption of our government in the 1871 Organic Act. So we'll get to that much later. We're going to go through, we're going to finish up the notes, Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention. Then we're going to dive into a new iteration of the ratification debates. We're just going to highlight very specific ratification debate points so that we put it right up front. And then we're going to go through the critical highlights that everybody needs to hear through the Virginia ratification debates, through and we're not going to give you New York. We're going to go through the heavily debated ones, but we'll probably skip South Carolina and we'll probably skip New York. Because South Carolina, we get enough of the picture of slavery and how, you know, that seems to be their world in the ratification debates. There are other issues that they do bring up, but they are obviously well attuned to understanding that getting into the Union because of the compromises that they obtained was critical. Because if just what would happen, North Carolina didn't get in. Think about this, folks. Georgia jumped into ratifying. South Carolina jumped in. South Carolina was waning on it, whether they were going to do it or not. And North Carolina didn't. If South Carolina wouldn't have joined the Union like North Carolina, they could have quickly changed everything so that they amended the Constitution, got rid of the 3/5 rule, got rid of the, or actually stopped the importation of slaves. In other words, there wasn't going to be enough representation in Congress to allow that to happen. In other words, they needed to get in there so that they could protect the compromises that they put in. And I'm amazed that North Carolina didn't jump in. And so, yeah, the slavery was basically put on notice for its eradication via the Constitution, but it didn't take long after 1812 for them to do what they needed to do to subvert that design in the Constitution. So anyway, so one of the things that I kind of want to dive into is some of the stuff that I've talked about before. And I know I've talked about, you know, the bumper music, my intro and my outro and all of that. That comes from Fanfare for the Common Man. And if you go look that song up and the origins of that song was designed to get people to feel good about getting involved in collectivism and communism. Fanfare for the Common Man. Even the name states that. And so I think it's a beautiful piece that was written to inspire people to surrender in feeling good about surrendering. I'm using it to feel good, to basically call upon all of us to stand up. And even though we may be the common man, we are all individuals and we deserve our inalienable rights, that we need to stand up and protect them. So I'm actually using it in contrast to the way it was designed. And I hope that all makes sense. And so that's why we got it. That's why we stick to it. And I know there are many different orchestrations of that song. but I choose to use the one that I do of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Now, here's the interesting thing. The Constitution, and I've mentioned this last time, copyrights in the Constitution are not permanent. As a matter of fact, the concept of having a, I'll just say a permanent Constitution, or not Constitution, permanent copyrights is absolutely repugnant to the Constitution. How? Because right here, and where we got the bankruptcies, there it is right there. It's in Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 7, to promote the progress. So the reason why the federal government, not the states, the federal government was given the central repository over patents and copyrights was to promote the progress of science and useful arts. In other words, things that benefited man by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writing. Limited time means that that was not intended whatsoever for the duration of their life. You wrote a book and that was it. And down the road, if somebody else wanted to actually, you know, rewrite that or, you know, cite it or what have you, it was fair game. And as a matter of fact, back in those days, society benefited big time by being able to take acts, plays, or what have you, and bring them to the United States without worrying about copyrights. Because the messaging and so forth promoted good things, righteous things, what have you. And so only those people who want to, you know, think about it this way. When you actually are writing and you, you know, there are people that write a song and then they're, you know, that's it. They're never productive again. And based on that song, they, you know, they're set for life. And that's nice. It's nice to be able to make that kind of investment, but the Constitution doesn't allow a permanent emolument for somebody or giving somebody that type of copyright. Now, one of the things that was interesting over time is the copyrights were always being challenged because if you have that music, then why should you have to pay for it again and again and again? Well, technically, folks, that's exactly what they've done. They've moved everything, and they're trying to get away from the delivery of media where you actually possess these things. How many people do you know that actually have DVDs, Blu-rays, and hard media for the movies, the songs, you know, and those types of things, that type of entertainment? Most people that I know, they actually live on subscriptions. In other words, the subscriptions that you pay for, you never own that. In other words, you always have to pay for access. And as far as I'm concerned, that is immoral. Because if you've already paid for that once, and you own that, then what's the difference whether you've owned that and you hear it in, you know, today or when you hear it 2 years down the road? You've paid for that to hear. Here's the other question. What do you do when all of a sudden you're reading a book, you've read it a couple times, you know, because it's a good book, it's a really good book. What happens when you hand that book to somebody else? Have you violated the copyrights of the book? Well, no, it's yours. You own that. And so that's what happens when these guys go out and they make a movie, they make, you know, a song. What they're doing, and this is just basic good business, is they're trying to make more and more money off of the little work that they do so they don't have to work as much. And I'm okay with that. Other than the fact that you, once you own that property, then all bets are off. And one of the things that actually came out in the 70s, I think it was late 70s, early 80s, because there were some labels, I believe it was the record labels, that were suing people because people were recording music off of the radio onto tape because it was being publicly, as long as, and in that particular point in time, if you were recording things off of the television, off of free air, was being freely broadcasted, then whatever you did with that, as long as you weren't reselling that, or if you paid for it and you made your own copy, because that's what the Supreme Court slam dunk, anybody can make their own copy. As a matter of fact, the whole point was, and God bless vinyl, the whole point was back in those days, you know, if the more you played your vinyl, the more it would wear down. And so the birth of tape, you know, became integral to help save the, you know, the life of your vinyl so that you could record it. And then you could travel around and listen to your tape anywhere. So the bottom line is, as we started looking at how the rights of the individual were actually being protected today, it's almost like you have no rights. The way the artist, Eric Clapton is one of them. And many of these people are actually going down this path of saying, you know, you don't deserve to have a right to my music. Well, why are we listening to them anyway? If they have that attitude, then why are we listening to them? And as a matter of fact, usually the ideologue, see, there's two sides of this ideology. There's the ideologue that wants people to be influenced by their music and they give it away. And then there's people that, you know, they feel like their music is so good that you got to pay through the nose for it. And, you know, I'll just call it the old supply and demand. You know, once you get to that point of name recognition or what have you, the demand goes up. So the cost goes up because you reduce your supply. Anyway, the point is, and actually what I want to do is I want to talk about how, because I've talked about this before, and I want you to realize what the music industry did. And as a matter of fact, these kids, most of these kids that wrote the music back in the 50s, 60s, and so forth, they had no idea. And so remember, I started this whole thing off about there was really no conspiracy. I believe when the record labels actually started in the wild, wild west, when anybody could create a record, standards started getting established in quality of recording, engineering, and those types of things. In the 1900s, when the ability to create a record came out, it's almost like the ability to create a video today. And a good quality video with good quality audio. I mean, the technology is easily accessible, affordable, that anybody can go and do it. I mean, how many people do you know were dumb enough to go watch the Blair Witch Project? I mean, a really crappy video, and it got raves. I mean, anyway, when we look at the early 1900s, when the reproduction of music just started actually getting out and more people were getting into the producing of these types of products, it created this wild, wild west. And then eventually the labels actually started establishing themselves. And you'll find that those labels, as they started pushing the 30s into the 40s and so forth, they actually, it's just like the car manufacturing. It was a cutthroat, wild, wild west, and how we ended up coming to the major three. Let me just tell you this, that the companies that ended up dominating weren't good or nice guys. These were cutthroat people, and they had agendas. And so when we look at what happened in the automobile industry, when we started looking at what happened in the label industry, we could actually see how things were being driven. Now, I'm almost of the opinion of thinking that some of the problems induced by cars were deliberately induced by cars so that they could, you know, get government to start protecting them. Because government comes in, what they do, they start regulating them. When, let me just say, when we look at how, you know, government comes in and regulates, most people think, oh, well, that's really good. They're tying them down, they're holding them, and they're keeping them from, you know, hurting people. And a great example of that is the tobacco industry. When the tobacco industry during the Clinton administration got sued, the big boys of the tobacco industry were laughing. They were happy to see this because the outcome was something they could absorb. And what ended up happening was they knew that that outcome would destroy the majority of their competition, because in the early 90s, tobacco production and cigarette production was the wild, wild west all over again. In other words, the advent of all of these different forms of tobacco products, of, you know, strawberry tobacco or what have you, every single one of those little cigarettes either got bought up or they just went out of business. And that is what actually became a big advantage for the tobacco industry, because they were being held for, you know, selling these things that harmed us, and they were going to pay for. Where did that money go? As a matter of fact, if that was a class action lawsuit and you got, you know, cancer, did you actually get that money? As a matter of fact, the way that all played out, it was almost like this blur. Everybody goes, oh, that's a good thing, and I'm telling you, it wasn't. This is just more evidence of how government gets involved. When they get involved with corporations, they do it in a way that is assisting those bigger companies. Sarbanes-Oxley was another way of doing that, creating bigger barriers for the smaller guys. It's the same thing with the ADA. The ADA, you know, oh, well, it gave us better access. No, it didn't. What it did was it destroyed the small guys, even though those little guys couldn't provide, you know, a disabled person that was in a wheelchair access. I mean, does that mean that they're evil, that they built that their business to be evil, to hurt the guy in the wheelchair? No. But they got destroyed over it because a person in a wheelchair sued them over the ADA. Something, first of all, that the federal government has no authority to be involved in. And so when we start looking at how they started creating all of these connections for control, I don't even blink an eye when I start looking at what they are doing. And when they started doing this, and I will tell you that by the 30s, the conspiracy within the label company, and as a matter of fact, McCarthy was right. Anybody out there that doesn't say, or that basically says McCarthy was a lunatic, you know, then they actually have no evidence. They're ignoring the evidence, because communism became, and the ideology of communism became rife throughout our entire entertainment industry. As a matter of fact, it became rife in our education system before the turn of the century in the 1800s. The facts are they've all been proven. So you have to either be, you know, I'll just say it this way. You either have to be believing the progressive agenda in getting you to look the other way when it came to McCarthy and what he was trying to do. Now, McCarthy, as a matter of fact, was too late. He was way too late. This is one of the reasons why they were capable of rewriting history and trying to obscure the facts. As I tell you, the labels in the 30s, Hollywood in the 30s, the money and corruption quickly came once the Wild Wild West started getting so big and so out of control. It wasn't even big money. It was just money started coming in and forming, and they actually started creating this, what we'll call this agenda of creating and controlling a medium so that down the road they would actually have control over the messaging, just like the news industry. We'll be right back after this quick promo. Thank you so much.
Hey If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so what I'm trying to basically lay out is the fact that, see, we've already spent half a show kind of talking about the conspiracy and proofs and evidence of that. And so there's some really good books out there. There's some really great sources. As a matter of fact, there are people and institutions that have been dedicated to uncovering all of these types of things. Now, I don't think it takes a genius to even acknowledge that there is this huge evil conspiracy. As a matter of fact, and this is the whole point, the reason why I spent all of this time so far on the what we'll call the recording label and the content that they started controlling. As a matter of fact, there's no doubt in my mind. And as a matter of fact, if you listen to the interview, we're going to cover a couple of songs. I'm going to play a couple of songs. And some of these people were, you know, absolutely willing participants because, you know, they needed the money. As a matter of fact, the first one I'm going to play is a Grand Funk song. And I think I can play this, and there you go, it's in the background there, and so you can kind of hear, this is a Grand Funk song regarding saving the earth. So too many people try to take from my earth, but we can't live without controlling our birth. We can't live without controlling our birth. This is an old song. Deep inside a voice cries out for you. I mean, this is a very moving song. It's called Loneliness, and I'll be, you know, inviting you to actually go check these things out. So he's guaranteeing us that mankind won't live long. And this is like the late 60s, very early 70s. Well, shoot, we've made it 50 years. And to me, in my lifespan, that's a long time. Especially if you look at kids today that are only 8 to 12 years old, they look at a 50-year-old as, you know, like ancient history. My point is that there's no doubt in my mind that these types of songs were being not only solicited, they were being pressured into writing these songs. And as a matter of fact, this next person, his name is Alvin Lee, who died about 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, I don't know. But this is really up front and in your face, and he was pressured to write this. And as a matter of fact, in an interview afterwards, he basically stated what he said in this song, that, you know, he felt the need to write the song, but, you know, he doesn't understand politics. I mean, that's not his milieu. I mean, he's a rock and roller. It's about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And the fact that he wrote this particular song was one of those that he was pressured to write, and he didn't want to come across judgmental and or an authority. And actually, he states this in the song. So forgive me, I'm going to actually play this long enough to where you actually hear him acknowledge that he doesn't know what to do. I mean, clearly he says, I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do. And so as we kind of look at, you know, what he's really saying here, as a matter of fact, I honestly think that when you read the lyrics to this, you know, to this song, you know, he really talks about, you know, dykes and fairies and so forth. And it's not like Freaks and Harrys, as a matter of fact, dykes and fairies. He's not being politically correct. He's seeing the perversion and the weirdness going on, and he's going, hey, I'd like to change the world, but I just don't know what to do, so I leave it up to you. In other words, the one thing that really makes this popular is the democracy tune, the mob rule. I leave it up to you, the mob. Now, here he clearly is being honest in trying to lay it all out there. But I don't think that he, and I don't think these other people really knew what they were, the door that they were opening. And I say that because I believe that some of these guys have actually turned. Now, when you look at Bruce Springsteen, this guy has embraced globalism, communism, big time. When you look at Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and as a matter of fact, I think Crosby just passed away after, you know, destroying his body and then paying money to bypass. I mean, talk about an ideologue for his entire life. I could go on and on and on about the music industry and how these guys are just hypocritical. And they believe that they're above everybody. I mean, when Crosby got, what, his kidney or liver, whatever it was, he destroyed and was able to get a transplant, he actually bypassed the entire process because he had the money. So when we look at, as a matter of fact, wasn't it Crosby that provided the donation of sperm for the creation of a child for a couple of lesbians? I mean, this guy was a hardcore ideologue. In other words, you know, he was committed to the cause. Some of these people actually don't or weren't. They did it because they had to. And now as they look back, they just go, you know, Ted Nugent. I mean, Ted Nugent is a conservative. I mean, I don't know if he ever was pressured to do some of the political stuff because he was in the 70s. By this point in time, the cultural war was pretty much run its course. I mean, we got Carter in to do all sorts of just terrible things to us. Bottom line, the last one I want to play, and this guy, there's no doubt in my mind that Roger Waters, and when we look at Pink Floyd, These guys, I believe, were ideologues, and they knew what they were doing. And here's the interesting thing, because the song I'm going to play is one that actually speaks out about the education system. But let's place context to this after we play this song. And so as we kind of go down the path of playing another brick in the wall, this is part two, by the way. There are three parts of this song, right? And so as we go down this path, we want you to hear what he's saying. Let me go back. So what he was saying in this is actually pointed towards the last bastion of Christianity and the last bastion of conservative, good, clean education. In other words, at this point in time, they wanted to get rid of that. As a matter of fact, the line when he says, where is it? We don't need no thought control, no dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teachers, leave the kids alone. In other words, they want the kids to actually be able to be enabled to do themselves. So here he is actually, as the ideologue, I think this was more of what the essence of Roger Waters was and is, because he's a hardcore ideologue. And when you look at the darkness of Pink Floyd's The Wall, because of his loss of his father and so forth, it's just like this guy, you know, he needs help. But he has talent, and he was able to create a lot of music, and much of the music was really, really dark, and especially his. And so when we look at this particular song, and what I'm doing is, why'd I do this? I honestly believe that we can use these exact same words, these exact same songs, other than the fact that they're copyrighted. Now, I'm playing this because this is a zero money show. You hear any advertisements? You hear any I don't even do endorsements right now because I wanted to make sure that there was just no illusion whatsoever that I am looking to for you to buy my books, for you to give me money. Because any institution that I've ran into that is driven by its finances and its money, I mean, money drives everything in one way or the other, right? It keeps the lights on, what have you. But we're self-funded, and we're not here to actually try to make a penny like everybody else you listen to. So, when we actually start playing these things, they can come after me for violating their copyrights. But bottom line, there's no money I made, and there's no money I'm attempting to make, or is there any type of conspiracy for me to bypass and give you this what they call intellectual property, that they have these permanent copyrights. Now, technically in America, those copyrights, those permanent copyrights, are illegal. So this kind of gets me to start going down this path. We can start actually using these songs against the education system. As a matter of fact, if you're a parent and you're actually going to a parent, you know, what do you want to call that? A teacher board or school board meeting where they're putting dogma, evil stuff into your kids' heads, and you're standing up against critical race theory and all the rest of the crap that they're doing in school, You should be everybody should be taking this song and playing it as loud as you possibly can. We don't need no thought control. In other words, we need to start turning the tables using the same music that they used to shame, you know, those good things, those wholesome things that were a part of our society as they were trying to root out and destroy those things. We need to do the same thing. And I truly believe, and I'll just say this before I go into my next thing I want to talk about. When we look at this, you know, this whole process of, you know, what we have to do, I believe that the children, innate within the children, and as a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, everybody that understands the life cycle of a human being, it is innate within the child to rebel against their parents. Folks, we now have this full controlled system in the education system that, as far as I'm considered, we are ripe for a revolution. All we have to do is give the children the truth at a, you know, at a young enough age, sixth grade, because that's when kids start really getting rebellious. Sixth, seventh grade, this is when I remember when kids started growing their hair, when they started, you know, becoming bold enough to smoke and do those things. I mean, maybe it's a little bit earlier than that, but we need to start giving the kids truths in elementary school, you know, in the latter years of elementary school, so that as they start learning the truth and they go, and they, all they have to do is go and discover for themselves what the real truth is. And they go, well, why is it that we're not learning these things? Because it becomes the epiphany and it becomes the catalyst of a revolution. Satan did this. He used that exact same revolting paradigm within a child, because a child just wants to revolt against their parents. How powerful is it when the children revolt against their parents with the truth? I see so many people that I grew up with, that I know throughout my years, that have just, they're clueless. They've actually embraced, they have no idea how dangerous the life that they're living, the direction that they're going, and they're just they're enabling all of this crap to happen. So I believe it's time that they get their comeuppance. I believe it's time for their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, or their children, whichever phase they are in their life, to get the truth and slap them in the face with it. This is where we actually can turn the tables, because at this point, they have a lock on our education system. And so we need to have a very serious conversation about capitalizing on the truth. Now, when I look at the, you know, the copyrights and all that stuff, that's all fine and great. It does speak to this grand conspiracy that took root, grew, and it saturated itself in every market space. When I say market space, how many people do you hear talk about a true free market today? As a matter of fact, nobody is, basically everybody says, oh, well, we have a free market, but we don't have a free market. Today, the only free market, what is a free market? A market that is unencumbered by government regulations and rules. Oh, well, but that's good. I tell you not. And I believe that, you know, the true free market is the black market, and that's what anybody will tell you. So as we look at where we're going and what we need to do, I got less than 10 minutes. I've already talked about the corruption of the court. I've talked about the failings of January 6th. Folks, if you're going to get out and you're going to actually take a stand, if you're using your First Amendment right of assembly and petitioning government for the redress of grievances, in other words, Don't go out into the park. Don't go out into the street. Don't go into a point, you know, of nothingness within the town, city, or where you live. You need to all mass assemble at your county commissioner's meeting room. You need to mass assemble at the building where your county commissioners meet. You need to start petitioning them and demanding them to actually live up to their oath of office and hold the state government and the federal government accountable. We cannot allow them to continue. As a matter of fact, the more you stop your county government from doing things, the better off you are. Because the crap that they're doing, 9 times out of 10, isn't going to benefit you and is actually ripping away your liberties and or enabling bad things to come further down the pike. So what we have to do is actually go down this path. Now, I just want to tell you, so here's the feedback Friday I have for you. I actually had a very positive meeting with county commissioners in Wyoming. Now, these guys are really, they're good guys, but they just don't know what and how to do what needs to be done. They want to create a constitutional county, but they don't know how to do that. And so what we need to do, and so let me just stop and go back to this old conversation I've talked about as far as the magistrate, because, you know, I've been pointing this out with the notes and so forth. The concept of the magistrate was basically broken asunder by the Constitution by dividing the magistrate into three separate branches: judicial, executive, and legislative. Legislative being the center of our sovereignty, delegating our sovereignty to that government. This is what they have the ability to do. And everything else is hinging. The executive and the judiciary hinges off what is delegated. In other words, they just can't hear a case. Now, the only place where a case for abortion is actually a legitimate court is a common law court in your county, period. There is no jurisdiction at the state level for them to actually hear that case. It's the same thing with the environment. There's nothing for your state court to actually go beyond that. And in a common law court, that's where it would end. There's really no appeals per se unless your constitutional rights are being violated or what have you. But bottom line, this whole civil law case where you can appeal and you can just make, you know, you can be dragged and destroyed financially through the court system, that shouldn't be happening. As a matter of fact, in a common law court, you have a right to defend yourself. You have a right to pursue for yourself. You really don't need to be a lawyer. And if you understand common law, it's really not that difficult. The problem is, and as a matter of fact, I'm not the one here to teach you that. There are good organizations that do teach common law. But some of these organizations are focused on the British form of common law. All you need to start learning is how to translate the biblical law of common law of Britain to the constitutional law of America. In other words, the supreme law of the land in America is the U.S. Constitution. The supreme law in Britain is the Bible under common law. Now, they've completely obviated that in Britain. I mean, they've abandoned all of that. As a matter of fact, they've become godless and they've gotten away with that. And the people have let them do that. But bottom line, we have to start pushing the issue. Now, here's the beautiful thing. You've also heard me talk about committees of safety and how committees of safety basically lend to when people start forming these jural assemblies. And you've heard me talking about these jural assemblies, these assemblies, and so forth. In America, you do not have the authority to do that. What you're doing is creating a shadow government. Then these juralists, these jural assemblies, or these other assemblies that are forming and organizing, they are shadow governments. They're actually creating an insurrection against the Constitution. However, if you have good county commissioners, those county commissioners can create a committee. That's exactly what we're doing in Wyoming by creating committees. This committee is, and they can call it either a committee of safety. And in other words, some of the things that they're going to be doing is they're going to be acting like a jury. So this was, they can call it a committee of safety. They can call it a common law grand jury, but they actually have to form, because as the representatives, they have the authority and the power to do it. Your sheriff doesn't have the authority and power to do it. These guys do. And we actually may be at a point where we finally get people, because we have to get people out of their comfort zone and actually not listening to the lawyer that's actually in the room with them, because they hired this guy. And if they have a guy that is teaching them contrary doctrine, then it is imperative that they look for somebody else, or they let that position go. They believe, and they've been told, that they absolutely have to have this legal protection by having this lawyer in the room with them. I am here to tell you that when it comes to the people and empowering the people with the supreme law of the land, giving them the ability to enforce the supreme law of the land by holding public servants accountable, lawyers won't stand for it. You have to go into court to do that. I am here to tell you that is not true. The reason we have the right to petition government for the redress of grievances is so that we don't have to walk into a court. We can walk right into our government, into our sovereigns, our legislators, and hold them accountable and call them out for removal. All we need are good, righteous men to say, yes, we need to hold these people accountable and remove these people. By doing that, we are literally on the way of creating the first scab in America. Right now, America is bleeding. Right now, there is no stopping the flow of blood. But with this little coagulant, this little bit of stoppage that we've got going in Wyoming, we actually may form the first scab and actually may spread that scab so that the state of Wyoming can heal. And if we can get the state of Wyoming to heal, then we can get the state of South Dakota, get the state of Montana, and all of the rest of the red states to start healing. So what we need is we need people to back away from their agendas in teaching, you know, this British common law, the British magistrate system, you know, your constitutional county, if you pay money to become a part of the CPSOA, any of that kind of crap. We need people to back away from that and actually encourage our public servants to pursue restoring the law of the land. The law of the land being common law, and common law based upon the U.S. Constitution, the state constitution, and the county constitutions. In other words, those powers delegated to those specific governments, those specific entities, those levels of government that have been created by our authority. And so, folks, I mean, we're at the cusp. There are times when I just feel like, you know, I'm not going to see the end of this. And then there's times when I go, wow, we could just literally break through that easily. And in this case, in this past week, I have felt that way. I feel like we're now with open armed and open eared and open minded people that are listening and going, oh my gosh. Now I know when I sit down and I usually have these conversations, I fire hose people, but it's important. And what I'm finding, and the beautiful thing is that I am finding, is that they're receiving this and they're testing it and they're finding the truth in it. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.